Thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. She's in Charlottesville, Virginia, and we'll be back Friday. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev called the return of an adopted Russian boy to his homeland a monstrous act. Russia has threatened to suspend adoptions by Americans because of the incident. In this hour, a discussion of international adoption and what would-be parents should know before trying to bring a child from a foreign country into their lives. Joining me in the studio, Thomas DeFilippo with the Joint Council on International Children's Services, and Janice Goldwater, founder of the nonprofit organization Adoptions Together. And joining us from NPR's studio in New York City, Dr. Jane Aronson. She's a pediatrician and CEO of Worldwide Orphans Foundation. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, Susan.
Good morning.
We invite our listeners to join our conversation later in this hour. You can call our toll-free number 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. You know, we'd love to hear from families who have adopted children abroad, who are thinking about doing that, or maybe from adoptees themselves. Maybe there's some young adults out there who were adopted from foreign countries. We'd be interested in hearing your perspective later in this hour. Well, Tom, this has certainly been in the news with this case involving a Tennessee family and a Russian boy. Tell us the latest on what's happening with that case.
Well, right now the young boy is obviously in the care of the Russian government. I believe he's getting counseling and some treatment there for the emotional trauma that he's been through as a result of this. And in terms of here in the U.S., it certainly has stimulated a lot of dialogue about what caused this and what families can do to prevent this kind of incident from happening again or getting in that type of a situation where they don't feel they have any other options. The local sheriff is still trying to interview the mother, but unsuccessfully to this point.
Is there a potential crime involved that would involve the sheriff?
Well, there could be. It could be child abuse, it could be child endangerment, abandonment, neglect, but that's certainly up to the law enforcement. That's not our area of expertise, but potentially there could be, yes.
So, Jane Aronson, when you heard about this, did it strike you as extraordinary, or was it an example of something you've faced before with adoptive families?
I think it was very sad because each child is so affected by these kinds of experiences. But in my 20 years as an international adoption medicine specialist, I've experienced many stories like this that have never made the news. Children who've been adopted in different countries who have been abandoned at the time of the adoption, left in hotel rooms. Children who've sought services with their families to go to various doctors, psychologists, where they've been left at the doctor's office and the parents just drive off and leave them there. And there have been other cases of children delivered to their countries of origin by parents in just this way, by the way.
Well, that just seems remarkable to me that this has happened. You're saying it's not so rare. It's not a unique circumstance.
No, it's not unique to me at all. And I think that, you know, when something like this happens, though, and it does become part of our public arena, it's a very important moment. It's a great moment, in fact, a moral moment for us to look at all the sides of the story to see why the system didn't work, especially because we want to make children's lives better. And this is a moment for all of us to sit down at the table and be able to look at the mother's story, the family's story, the boy, the adoption agencies, the social worker, and also clearly how adoption in this particular case was managed from the other end, meaning in Russia. What was the orphanage like for him, and who was he at that orphanage? And what's the staffing like in the orphanage, and what are the professional aspects of care for children living in orphanages currently in Russia?
So every step of this process, the orphanage in Russia, the adoption process, the family in Tennessee. Janice, let's start with the family in Tennessee. So they have this adopted child. They're clearly having trouble. What should have happened?
Well, what should have happened is that they should have contacted initially their post-placement social worker. Anytime there's an adoption, the first thing that happens is that a family is trained. This is when it's done correctly. The next thing that happens is they have a full home study evaluation, you know, prior to ever going to adopt the child. Once the family returns home, for the next at least a minimum of 6 months, they have what's called post-placement supervision, where a social worker comes out to their house and visits them and offers support and information and, you know, helps the family with whatever challenges they're dealing with. So I don't know that a social worker went out to their house. I do know in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, it's required. And, you know, this is our practice. And this woman should have reached out to somebody. She should have called her placement agency. You know, I understand she worked with an agency in Tennessee to do her home study and then with another agency in Washington State to do the adoption. She should have reached out to somebody and said, I'm in trouble. Help.
Jane, go ahead. I just want to sneak in here that there are some new facts that have come to light that really help us out tremendously. And that is that she actually was visited in January for a post-placement visit. I don't know all the facts about it, but she was visited on this one occasion. So it would be really important to get that feedback. And the other thing is that she did contact a specialist in reactive attachment disorder. And that specialist and I have been in touch. And she reached out and then did not meet her requirements for the appointments to come. She was quite upset. There were phone calls. There was interaction. And she clearly understood the gravity of this child's behavior, but didn't understand her responsibility, finally. And this speaks to the big issue, which I want to bring up now, and that's that it's about denial. What we see here is no matter how many services we provide to families, as Janice just mentioned, there's a huge amount of pre-adoption workshops and social work interaction and preventive services for families before they even adopt, requirements by state. The Hague Convention on Adoption has made this a very important part of becoming an adoptive parent. And then there's the post-placement stuff. But the bottom line is, in the 20 years I've been doing adoption, what I've learned is that when you try to get people to come back to learn more after their adoption, it's almost impossible. People want to live a normal life. They want to live happily ever after. They want to be considered a normal family. So they're often embarrassed, humiliated, and upset and become isolated because they are so sad and depressed that their adoption has gone awry.
So, Tom, what should happen in that before the adoption takes place? What kind of training should would-be parents have, would-be adoptive parents?
Well, most agencies, as Janice indicated, that are working on their best practices would provide approximately 10 hours of parent training. And if they were adopting a child that was older, say over the age of 3-4 years old, then they might get individualized training on that specific issue. Because most children, or many children, I should say, that are institutionalized for a sustained period of time will have special needs. They might not be classified as a special need, where most people would think, you know, cerebral palsy or a wheelchair user, something along those lines. But emotionally, they're going to have individualized needs. And it's important for those families to recognize that and to, again, know what the resources are. And I'd like to just throw in one other quick point. In looking at this specific case, it appears, on the surface at least, that all the appropriate steps were taken. The background checks, as Jane indicated, the post-placement visit where apparently nothing was significant was reported by the adoptive parent. It seems that the system broke down when the mother made the decision to put the child on the plane rather than to call either Child Protection Services or even the police. You know, calling the travel agent was the where this seemed to break.
Well, Jane, are most children who are adopted from foreign countries, are most of them special needs children, children who are not, for whom you're going to need to have some special training, some special support?
Well, I think what Tom just said is very, very important. If you saw me right now, you'd see me kind of have a little bit of a grin, because all children adopted, particularly from institutions who've been abandoned or a plan has been made for a child to be brought into care, public government care, all children are traumatized. There's no prenatal care, malnourishment during the pregnancy. And in this particular case, we're looking at Eastern Europe, which has a very high incidence, particularly in Russia and Ukraine, of women drinking during pregnancy. There's also exposure to drugs, smoking, environmental toxins, congenital infections. So the kids come from being low birth weight and not premature, generally speaking, sometimes 1,500, 1,800 grams, a few pounds. They come into an institutionalized setting. First, they're in a hospital where they lay for hours doing nothing. Then they come into an orphanage where there's huge numbers of children and few staff and no professional development for the staff. And they're warehoused. They lie in their own excrement. They're unstimulated. They cry. They're depressed. And they stop crying. They're poorly fed. And they become severely, severely traumatized by this institutionalization process. And then what happens is, clearly these kids are rescued. And people feel that way. We all feel this way as adoptive parents. I am one. You feel a sense of taking these kids out of this horrible situation, and you are passionately removing them. But the problem is that there is organic brain syndrome in a lot of these cases where kids are exposed to alcohol, as I mentioned, and malnourishment during the pregnancy and thereafter in the institution. And that brain damage, though the brain is plastic, has its effect on the way the child is wired. And that leads to a very high risk of things like learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder, with and without hyperactivity, and attachment issues. And all kids adopted from abroad, in my last breath here, I apologize, have attachment issues because they don't understand intimacy or social connection. But finally, reactive attachment disorder, thank God, is a rare disorder in normal, healthy children as well.
We're talking with Dr. Jane Aronson. She's a pediatrician who specializes in adoption medicine and orphan children, and she's the founder and CEO of Worldwide Orphans Foundation. We're going to talk more about this Russian case and more broadly about issues and challenges involved with foreign adoptions. First, we're going to take a short break. Our phone lines are open. You can call us at 1-800-433-8850. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. And joining us now from his office in Washington, D.C., is ITAR TASS Washington Bureau Chief Andrei Sitov. Andrei, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Susan. Pleasure as always.
Now, I know you've covered this issue of adoptions from Russia for years. Tell us what your reaction was to the case of this Tennessee family.
This is the one of the more bizarre cases, but the reaction was immediate. Not again. How can it happen so often in this great country of the United States, the richest country on earth? How can people do such strange things to kids?
Now you say, how can it happen so often? What do you mean?
What I mean is this is the most bizarre, one of the most bizarre cases, but not the most tragic, definitely. Over the years, by American statistics, there have been 16 cases of death of adopted children over the past 15 years, and some of them quite recent.
And what has been the reaction inside Russia to this latest case?
Incredulity, shock, and demands for action from the government. And the action is being taken. President Medvedev raised the issue in his interview with ABC before coming over for the nuclear summit. The Russian Foreign Ministry said that they will raise the issue of stopping or freezing all adoptions from Russia to the United States until a bilateral treaty is signed with the Americans. The Russian parliament has chimed in with similar demands, and the regional government in the far east of Russia, where the child came from originally, they say they want him back. I understand also some blood relatives are also saying they are willing to take him in.
Well, is the Russian attitude that adoptions by Americans should stop, that they're a bad thing, or that there just needs to be a little more oversight?
At this point, my understanding is they are arguing that the adoption should stop until we have a bilateral treaty, as I said. Next week, a delegation from the State Department will be traveling to Moscow to discuss this issue with the Russian government. Obviously, the Americans do not want such drastic measures. They point out, at least I don't know if that's the government statistic, but I talked to the National Council on Adoptions here, and they say that since 1993, there have been more than 60,000 Russian kids adopted in the United States, and obviously most of them receive loving care from their new parents.
Yeah, that's a huge number, 60,000. So you worry about the 16 who have died here. Now, there's one case I know going on now, a homicide case that you've been following. Tell us about that.
The most recent case, frankly, it's a longer story. I'm very pro adoption, frankly, personally. In 2002, I saw with my own eyes a couple of adopted Russian kids who are here named Max and Andy Greenfield. American father, an American hero, a Vietnam vet who lost a leg in Vietnam, adopted these two children whose legs had been amputated because of some complications during birth. And he raised them. He believed that he is the best person on earth to give a true life to these children, and he did. I saw them walking on their artificial limbs and saying, sky's the limit. So, again, I'm all for adoptions. But then I've also witnessed some terrible things. And I want to tell you a story of another American hero. At least in my book, she is one of the greatest American heroes. Her name is Phyllis Johnson. She is a lady who now lives in Pennsylvania, who used to live in Jersey. Her son and his wife adopted three Russian kids in 1999. And then 10 months later, one of these children, Victor, died of cold, of hunger, and abuse. The parents were convicted, and this lady, Phyllis, she testified against her own son. Basically, she helped convict her own son and his wife for what they did to this child. And when they were convicted, she readopted the other two children. They are twins. Their names are James and Josiah, and she is raising them by herself. She even took them back home to Russia to meet their biological family. We covered that. The Russian air company helped them with tickets. She doesn't speak any foreign languages. She never went further away than Mexico, but she traveled all across the around the world, all across Russia for these kids. So, again, she is a true hero. And what happened in early March, I think it was like March 3rd, I received a call from her. And she says, Andrew, you'll never believe this. I said, what? It's happened again, right where I live now, in Pennsylvania. I said, what happened? Another child died. And we checked, and it turned out to be true. Another child died. His name here was Nathaniel Craver. His original Russian name was Vanya Skorobogatov, but when he was adopted, he was a baby. So nobody really knew that he had been adopted as a Russian boy. So the case was eerily similar. Again, malnutrition, abuse, 80 bruises and scars on his body, 20 scars on his head. The parents, the adopted parents, are awaiting trial now, so there will be a judgment on their guilt. But the investigation, and I've spoken to the local sheriff's office, the investigators know what they're talking about, and they are really sure they will convict. So these are the cases when I look at that, and that's where my reaction comes in, where I say, not again. I don't understand how in this great country, at this day and age, some people, and I stress the word some, obviously, some people can do such unimaginable, cruel things to children.
Yeah. Well, Andrei Sitov, thank you very much for joining us. Andrei Sitov is the Washington bureau chief for ITAR-TASS, the Russian news agency. Janice, what kind of effect have you seen this highly publicized case have on Russian adoptions?
The effects really, you know, are alarming. I think, first of all, the Russian government is duly horrified, and they should be, as we all are. I mean, desperate parents make desperate decisions. And I think what it has also brought to light is that there's a lot of families who are out there. This is one in particular who was struggling and not able to get the services that she needed to get help.
Andrei talked about the impact in Russia and the desire for some more government involvement to prevent cases like this from happening again. What about for parents who are would-be parents who are thinking about foreign adoptions? Tom, has it had an effect on the
Susan,
people like
I
that?
I just wanted to say one thing about prevention. You know, when he talked about 60,000 children being adopted from Russia and 16 dying, one child is too many dying. And the fact that the majority of children who are adopted are thriving in their families needs to be stated, that all of these children come home significantly at risk, and with the right intervention and the right supports and adequate amounts of supports, you know, families can be okay.
There certainly are a lot of great success stories, as Andrei mentioned, from children who have been adopted. Tom, has there been an effect on people, Americans, who are thinking about foreign adoptions? Have you seen this cause any reluctance or second thinking?
I think it's impacted it in two ways. One is both at the federal level within the Russian Federation and also at the regional level. There's been a dampening of enthusiasm, obviously, for international adoption or the utilization of international adoption. That's combined with their own burgeoning domestic permanency services for children. And their child protection. I mean, this young boy was actually removed from his family because of abuse within that Russian family. So their system's really building up. So between those two pieces, whether it's from the federal perspective or the local judges who are hesitant or more hesitant to place a child or allow a child to be placed with an American family. And then on this side, some families, they hear stories like this. You know, hear descriptions of the children and the damage that's done to them in an institution, and they become hesitant. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it helps them have a realistic, you know, certainly not every kid that comes into their home through adoption is going to display these types of behaviors, but they need to know that it's possible, and they need to be able to provide the resources and the help and be willing to get the help. As Jane indicated, to not go into denial and be willing to get the help that they might need.
You know, we've got a lot of people waiting to join our conversation on the phone. Let's take one of those calls from a woman who adopted a child from Korea. Lee's calling us from Rochester, New York. Lee, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our experience was we adopted from Korea in 2008. I wanted to bring up the issue that not all countries have their children in orphanages. With Korea, they have a foster care program. And in our case, we adopted at 14 months, and he was with a wonderful foster family, an older woman and her husband and two grown sons. He had 24/7 care, one-on-one care, and that really benefited him. Now, there still was an attachment transition period for any child or individual that's taken from one particular home environment and placed with another, with people that he doesn't know, new smells, new sounds, new sights, new language. We experienced transition of about 6 months before I really noticed a very secure bonding in both directions between my husband and I and our child. But I can only speak strongly and favorably of the Korean program.
And how is he doing now?
Oh, he's wonderful. He's 3 years old right now.
And Lee, tell
Susan,
can
I sneak in there? And
sure,
just,
Jane, go ahead.
It's great that Lee called, because what it points up is the fact that foster care really would be the better route to go with kids who can't live with their permanent, you know, with their birth families. Certainly, kids really need permanency. So adoption, you know, finally into a permanent home is our goal. But foster care, when it's done well, is just phenomenal. And the other thing that she pointed out, which is really important, and she said it, and that's that six-month period on both sides. And what you see in this case, and in many cases, is parent attachment disorder. Many parents are very frightened during that transition period, don't reach out, don't have services, because they're very afraid to talk about the feelings they have, which are negative feelings. They're fearful of their children, and they also are disappointed that they don't feel connected to their child. And that parent attachment disorder can actually move a child away from that natural transitional process towards intimacy.
Lee, thanks very much for your call. I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's take another call from an adoptive parent. Trish is calling us from Tallahassee, Florida. Trish, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for taking my call. I am the mother of a child who was adopted from China. She was 5 months old when she was abandoned, and we know this because she was found with a note. And then she spent 9 months in an orphanage in Gutian, and then we adopted her at 14 months, and I had the good fortune to be able to visit the orphanage where she lived for those 9 months. And I want to caution people about assuming that children who are brought up in orphanages for whatever period of time are somehow neglected or abused, because it's just different. They don't have the same amount of resources. They don't have, yes, the, you know, 3-to-1 ratio of nannies or whatever. But I do want people to understand that, for the most part, orphanage workers love these children, and they care very much about them in these foreign countries. And while, yes, we are, in a sense, rescuing them, I don't want potentially adoptive parents to think that the child they're getting is necessarily badly damaged because they spent time in an orphanage. It's not, you know, what you would provide for your child in your own home, but it is a safe environment for the most part, and they are cared for. And the second thing I want to say very quickly is that when you adopt a child from a foreign country and you travel over there with all the hopes and dreams that all parents have for their children, it's a difficult trip. You're exhausted when you get home. Your child, as the caller before said, you are an alien to them. You smell, look, sound, taste different to them. They're scared to death. You're totally exhausted. And the child is it's not like bringing a baby home from the hospital, but it's worth it. It is worth it if you can hang in there through that transition period. Reach out for the services that your local children's home societies provide. Ours is phenomenal. And talk to other adoptive parents, and above all, get in a support group for families who have adopted from a foreign country. And my child will be 9 next month, and I could not be more in love with her. She is an amazing, amazing child, and I am so proud of her.
Trish, thanks so much for your call. Janice.
I think our last two callers did a fabulous job in pointing out how important it is to not make general assumptions about all children that come out of environments. I think we need to recognize the genetics, the prenatal environment, the environment that the child is actually in, and all of this, and the nutrition, all of this affects each individual quite differently. So many people will say, well, you know, I want to adopt a child from, you know, of this age range, from this region, and, you know, can you be sure that they're going to have whatever, you know, be in whatever condition? No, we can't. No, we can't. Families need to be educated about the vast array of effects of early maltreatment and be available within themselves, have the capacity to reach out. You know, Dr. Aronson talked about adults and having their own attachment challenges with the child, or bonding with the child. As adults who adopt children, we need to look within ourselves and manage the feelings that we're having and reach out. And possibly that's what this woman in Tennessee did not do. She did not have the capacity to really take in the help that was available for her.
Janice Goldwater, she's founder and executive director of a nonprofit organization called Adoptions Together. She began her career as a social worker, as a marriage and family therapist before moving into child welfare some time ago. We're going to take a short break and then come back and continue our conversation. We're going to take more calls with different perspectives, including a man who has adopted children domestically and wonders why some Americans choose to adopt children abroad. So we hope you'll stay with us. Thanks.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the German Embassy and the German Information Center, whose Germany.info publishes news and politics, culture and lifestyle at Germany.info, by the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness, on the web at MelvilleTrust.org, and by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. This is NPR.
A naturalist on her adventures with hummingbirds, hawks, and other feathered creatures. Why birds are far stranger, more wondrous, and more like us than we imagine. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We're talking about the challenges of international adoptions. And we had a caller who unfortunately hung up who wanted to talk about his own adoption of children within the United States, wondering why some families choose to go abroad. And we have a similar email from a listener saying, I know it is a contentious topic, but what is the difference between the process and costs of international versus U.S. adoption? Why do so many people end up doing international adoptions? Tom, what's your perspective on that?
Well, I think there's a couple things. The first point is that, unfortunately, due to a lot of restrictive policies from foreign governments and also the lack of leadership from the part of the U.S. government, international adoptions have plummeted from 24,000 a few years ago to this year less than 10. So there's fewer families that are able to adopt from internationally. However, the desire and the interest is still there. Anytime you create your family, however you do it, that's a very personal decision, right? Whether that's through giving birth, adopting domestically, going through domestic foster care, or internationally. I think it's almost impossible to hit a broad stroke and say, here's why everybody does it this way. You know, certainly, if you have a child by birth, no one comes up to you and says, hey, why did you decide to give birth? You know, there's plenty of kids out there in the foster care system that need homes. You know, people see children in need, and they have a desire to parent, so why not?
Jane, do you have any perspective on that?
Yeah, I would add, I think it's very cute what Tom just said about, you know, not asking birth parents why they chose to have babies. It's really important for everyone to know that there are very passionate people in the world who get connected to their own roots, people who've been brought up, for instance, in Eastern Europe or have an experience with work in Asia or are Asian. People make those choices based on some of that issue. So they'll go to Asia because they are connected in some way to Asia, or they'll go to Russia or Ukraine because of their background. And also because I think people are very taken by the fact that kids who are abroad are living in institutions, and people feel sensitive to that issue about little orphans. And the other thing I'd like to add is in terms of Trish's comment, she talked about her 9-year-old daughter adopted from China. I think it's very important to remember that orphanages do vary from country to country. I am the CEO of Worldwide Orphans Foundation. We work in currently 6 countries, and we have been in 12. And our whole purpose is to make orphanages a more, enriched environment by improving health care in the orphanage and mental health and development, because there's such variance from orphanage to orphanage and from country to country in the style of care of children. And, you know, we've been making big differences in the way children live in those settings by enriching them in their lives each day. But I think what we all need to do, probably from today's discussion, is to sit at a table, all of us. This is an opportunity for us to work with the Russians. I think it's great that the State Department is going to meet in Moscow, because it's a time to sit down and look at all of the things we can do now to make a difference. And one of the big things that I'm going to plea for right now is that we really need to work with the Russians on what institutionalized life is like for kids, and prenatal care and prevention of drinking for women who are pregnant.
Because, of course, all these Russian children in orphanages are not going to be adopted by families.
Right.
A lot of them will grow up there. You know, the agency involved in this particular case is called the World Association for Children and Parents. And we've gotten an email from a listener who says she wanted to speak up for the placement agency in the Russian case. "I am working," she writes, "with the same agency to adopt from another country. One of the reasons we chose it as our placement agency was because they had a reputation for making it quite clear to parents that such developmental issues could arise and be unknown before the placement." Is that also your experience, Janice? Have you worked with this agency?
Yes, absolutely. The agency is known as WACAP in Washington State, and Adoptions Together and WACAP have worked together in partnership for a number of years, with them sending us families who are adopting children through our programs and us sending them families. One of the reasons I like to work with WACAP is because they have the same high standard of training parents, preparing parents, and then providing a lot of support for them afterwards. So when I heard that this was a WACAP family, I thought, oh, but you know, for the grace of God, this could happen to any agency, because I mean, it's sort of like, as an agency director, this is my worst nightmare, that there's a child that we placed out there with a family who's struggling and not reaching out for support.
All right. Let's go to Heather. She's calling us from Vermont. Heather, thank you for joining us.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling. My husband and I have a biological daughter, and we adopted a little girl from China approximately 6 years ago. She's 7 now. So she was 1 at the time that she came. We love her dearly. We will fight forever to try to help her heal. But I can sympathize, even though I would never, ever condone what the woman in Tennessee did. I can sympathize with her desperation. My daughter has reactive attachment disorder and severe post-traumatic stress disorder. I went to the orphanage. It was terrible. She was extremely malnourished. There was no heat. It was obvious that she had just been laying tied in her crib. She had ligature marks. I know not all orphanages are like that, but in her particular case, yes, that was the situation. She came home to me kicking and screaming and hasn't stopped in 6 years, basically. The first couple of months, I was in a haze. I really thought that there was something wrong with me as a parent. I did everything that I did with my biological child, tried total attachment parenting, and nothing worked. She would not bond. She screamed, she kicked, and I tried to meet all of her needs, and it just didn't seem to help. I got into therapy with her within about 3 months, We've been in therapy ever since. We've made a lot of progress, but I have serious concerns about her future. She has extreme anxiety. She self-loathes beyond belief. Her self-esteem is so low. And what I wanted to bring attention to is we have been screaming and kicking for help and not been able to really get her the help that she needs. The second we told the adoption agency that she had a diagnosis of RAD, we never heard from them again. They basically, you know, stopped calling. They didn't want to hear from us either. We have been trying to get her into a neuro reorganization program, but they're extremely expensive. Insurance doesn't cover them, and not all families have the resources to just enter these programs. I'm hoping that today's show will bring awareness that there's a lot of families out there that are in extreme desperation. We are dealing with violence that we never thought possible from a small child. There's been days when we've just watched her and, you know, clutched each other because we're so saddened by the fear and hurt that she has in her heart. And this is, I have no doubt, from her early experience.
So, Heather, do you regret now having gone through with this adoption?
No.
And why don't, given all the difficulties you've described, why don't you regret it? Why are you still glad that you did it?
Well, I've got to say, it's not what I expected for my life. I certainly had different ideas in mind, but in some ways it explains why God made me so stubborn. It really does, because I feel that, well, there's a purpose that she came into our life, and it's as difficult as it is. You know, I feel that maybe I'm the right person to help her through her life as she transitions.
You are the right person, Heather. Dr. Jane,
I'm trying.
Here. You're the right person. The you know what? This phone call to me, I'm going to take this phone call away. This is a beautiful moment for me. I thank you for calling, Heather, because what you've done is you've really made yourself vulnerable and opened yourself to us and balanced what the view is here. And you've also shown the most important piece of parenting, which is about personal responsibility. Under duress, under the worst circumstances, we as parents must show personal commitment and responsibility to our children, no matter who they are.
So, Jane, would you have any advice for Heather? Any course ahead that might be helpful?
Yes, Heather can email me at orphandoctor@gmail.com. And
I'm sorry, what was the email again?
orphandoctor@gmail.com. And I'll make some recommendations for you in different pathways that you need to go, because there's a real system in dealing, forget about adopted kids, any child who suffers and has that inner pain and that crazy wiring that ends up making them so unhappy and so anxious. There are many strategies that we can, you know, adopt to help them, and I'm very happy to share them with her.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Heather, go ahead.
I just wanted to say I'm greatly appreciative, and I'm really hoping that there's a lot of other families that are in my situation that are listening, because it's a very lonely place to be. Families often don't believe what's happening. They can't believe that a child could be so extremely violent. Friends are isolating you because they, you know, they don't want to be around it, or they don't believe you. A lot of people are falsely accused. Even here in our own community, someone has been falsely arrested in their adoption issue. It's, you know, you hate to say, oh, this child is manipulative or terribly violent or in any way make the child seem like a bad person, but they're just reacting to the fear that's in their heart. And I'm extremely interested in what Dr. Aronson said about the organic brain disorder. You know, we don't know how their little brains were affected from the malnutrition and neglect and abuse that they may have suffered.
All right, Heather, Absolutely. Thank you so much for your call. Janice.
Oh, Heather, I just wanted to make sure you know about ATTACH, the Association for the Training and Treatment of Children with Attachment Challenges. It's attach.org, ATTACH.org. It's a professional association of parents and professionals who focus primarily on helping children heal who have had early experiences. And you'll find that there's a lot of parents who are in the same position you're in, parents who love and cherish their children, who are really struggling and really need to reach out and wrap around each other to get through sometimes each day, each moment at a time. So I highly recommend reaching out to attach.
Tom, we had a lot of talk about adoptions focused on Haiti after the terrible earthquake there. Tell us what the situation is now with adoptions from Haiti.
Well, right now there's approximately 1,100 children who were evacuated through the humanitarian parole process. Those children are now, we're now working with Department of Homeland Security and Health and Human Services to make sure those children actually finalize their adoptions, as that's a challenge, and then they get citizenship. It's a very difficult path because of the way they came into the U.S., and some of them don't even have a path to get U.S. citizenship, so we're working with members of Congress to address that issue. And then in terms of new adoptions, the Haitian government has begun to process new adoptions. Now, we're not encouraging families to, pile up in line, even though the outpouring is certainly comes from a great place. But the government there right now has no real capacity to handle a large influx of new cases. They have plenty of families in line.
Tom, you mentioned that the number of adoptions from abroad has really declined
right.
in recent years. Why has it gone down?
Well, I think there's a couple different reasons, but primarily it's government's reactions to either abuse or corruption. So there's no human entity in the world that is lacking of corruption, and children are abused in every country in the world. It's not unique to the United States. It's not unique to Russia, China, anywhere. And that's just a sad statement to be able to have to make. But the reaction to that, unlike it is in most social services when there's a problem, the reaction is to close the system. So you have a threatened suspension in Russia, a closure in Romania, Cambodia, Vietnam, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan. You know, I could just keep naming the responses. And then on top of that, there is an institutional bias by some in the aid and development community against international adoption and moving a child from one country to the next.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Well, I wonder, is there concern about placement agencies that are actually exploitative, that are making money off adoptions, that are not kind of motivated by the goodness of their heart? Janice, is that a problem?
I would say whenever economics are involved, there's the potential that could be a problem. You know, the Hague accreditation process should hopefully stop some of that, and licensure within communities. But, you know, whenever there's economics involved, we need to be careful.
Tom, go ahead.
Following up on what Janice said about the Hague accreditation, there's still countries and agencies that are not Hague accredited. And while it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not a good agency or not ethical, there's quite a strong movement now to ensure that all international adoptions are completed by an agency that is Hague accredited. So therefore, they would be licensed by their state, by the country in which they're working, and by the U.S. Department of State itself. So you have three levels of accreditation effectively. And there's a really strong movement in Congress, I believe, also to make that a reality.
Let's try to take another call. Susan is calling us from Falls Church, Virginia. Been very patient holding on. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you for having me. I'm very sad that we're having this conversation about this subject, but I'm so pleased that we are having this conversation. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I work exclusively with adoptive families. I'm also an adopted person myself from Colombia, South America. I agree so much with what everyone has said today, particularly liking Dr. Aronson's parental attachment disorder comment. I think I see that very frequently, and I think parents need a place to be allowed to have those feelings. But what I really called to say is that I'm really hoping that all the adoptive parents who are listening and all the professionals can please talk to your children. The children I've seen in the past couple days in my practice are very scared by this story. It makes them very sad. It's a disturbing story. And they're fearful that if they have mad times or if they're acting up or doing things that typical children, all children do, that there could be the possibility that they might have to go back, even if they have the most wonderful, loving parents in the world. So I'm going to say that even though I'm an adult, I'm a successful person, I'm a mom, it makes me feel really sad, this story. And some children have told me it makes them feel like they're second best. You know, you hear in the adoption community, second choice, but not second best. Well, children have been saying to me directly, it makes me feel like I'm not as good as a child who was biologically or born by birth to their parents. So please, talk to your children, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Such an interesting perspective. It hadn't occurred to me that young children who have been adopted might be scared by this story.
You know, Susan, I'm so glad you called and brought that up, because children are so affected by the media. In fact, my very own child, who is 18 and was adopted 8.5 years ago, said this morning, "Mom, I'm so glad you didn't send me back on an airplane when I did things that weren't so good."
I want to thank all three of our guests for joining us this hour on The Diane Reem Show to talk about the challenges and some of the joys of international adoption. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Susan.
I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Reem. Thanks for listening.
The Diane Reem Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.